You're listening to West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Earlene McMichael. Martin Luther King Jr. wanted the Fair Housing Act to pass during his lifetime, but it happened instead within days of his death in April of 1968. 50 years later, how is the act doing in combating housing discrimination? I turned to Pat May of the Fair Housing Center of Southwest Michigan for answers. She is a board member there and a former longtime center administrator. She says she has personally experienced housing discrimination in Kalamazoo. She moved to the city from Alabama in 1965. Ms. May, welcome to WMUK.
Thank you.
So you were the Director of Education and Outreach for the Fair Housing Center of Southwest Michigan for 13 years. What does the Fair Housing Center of Southwest Michigan do?
We actually investigate complaints of housing discrimination, and we provide lots of education. Most of the education we provide is by request, but some we just offer. We volunteer to do training as well. And we provide education on the fair housing laws, the do's and don'ts, consequences.
Where did these requests come from?
Well, the Fair Housing Center covered 9 counties, so it came from the housing providers themselves, landlords. We did a landlord association. We did training for the Association of Realtors, and we trained realtors individually and housing providers individually.
Last week, the Fair Housing Center of Southwest Michigan held its annual conference, and the theme was the 50-year anniversary of the Fair Housing Act. What does that act do, and what necessitated the need for it?
Well, what necessitated the need for it was the fact that there were unfair housing practices. People of color, families with children, people with disabilities were being denied housing. The 1968 Fair Housing Act is an extension of the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which, among other things, prohibited discrimination in the purchase, sale, lease, or conveyance of real property on the basis of race. There was no provision in the act for reinforcement. And that was one of the things that I taught. With the 1866 law, there was no enforcement to it. So the 1968 Fair Housing Act then gave us enforcement capabilities, and it added other protected classes. It also added religion and national origin. And then it was amended again in 1988 to add disability and familial status, that meaning families with children.
So you can't discriminate against families that have children, because that was happening, apparently.
Yes, it was. It happened to me.
Really?
Yes. When I had my son, first off, I was pregnant and my landlord kicked me out. So I moved in with my brother until after my child was born. I was trying to rent a one-bedroom apartment because my husband was in Vietnam and we were living on minimum income. And no one would rent to me a one-bedroom apartment or rent to me because I had a child. Finally found a landlord would rent to me, but he says, you got to have a two-bedroom because you have a son. And a mother and a son can't share a bedroom. That was not unlawful in 1967 or 68.
And you were denied the housing while you were pregnant?
While I was still pregnant and after I had the baby.
So if we look at the Fair Housing Act over time on the national level, and then we'll get into locally, has it been effective?
Somewhat. I like to say, from my experience in working with the Fair Housing Center and working with, you know, housing providers and understanding the law, is that the law doesn't provide complete protection. There's always exceptions. And there are people that want to discriminate or don't like the law, and they find a way around the law. And that's what our work at the Fair Housing Center prove, that many people find a way around the law or they violate the law, period.
What are some of the common ways that they do try to skirt around the law?
Just not saying what's available, charging higher rental rates for based on color, or based on family status, higher security deposits, steering. Steering is a big thing.
What is steering?
Steering is actually putting groups of people together. They actually are grouping people, black people, together in different units. So in other words, I would say that I'm not going to put you here, but I'll steer you over here by not telling you what's available, everything that's available. I want to tell you what's available based on where I think you belong.
Yeah, not totally disclosing all the available units.
Yes.
in a building. Mm-hmm. And saying essentially that I'm going to put all the black people over here or whatever group of people, we're
right.
going to put them all over here. Let's talk historically across the country and even locally in terms of discrimination and housing. The federal government had its own hand in making communities more segregated. It did this through redlining. And that was through a federally funded low interest loan program where undesirable neighborhoods, mostly where blacks lived, were marked in red on a map. And usually the main factor was race as to why those communities were undesirable. So it made it hard for those individuals to get homes in those communities. Explain redlining.
Redlining is where the cities or the communities drew a line around undesirable areas. And those places where only the people of color could live in those areas, in other words. They wouldn't provide loans to those areas. They didn't provide insurance to those areas. Or the insurance was higher than normal.
So what happened is it was hard to get loans even in the black areas.
Mm-hmm.
But when blacks tried to get out of those areas and go somewhere else,
they couldn't get out.
They couldn't get out. So mm-hmm. It was like you were between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, you were between a rock and a hard place, because if you were to move out, the few that was able to move out back in the 60s and early 70s, they would move into a, let's say, all-white neighborhood, a predominantly white neighborhood. The white people moved out the neighborhood. And so when the white people moved out, it became then hard to get insurance, for other people moving in.
Let's also talk about another practice where I believe it's called, restricted covenants?
Restricted covenant.
Where the deeds of the home would indicate that the home could not be sold to people of color.
Exactly. And that was nationwide. All across the country, we had those restricted covenants. And right now, once those restricted covenants was written in the original deed, they're still there. They just drew a line through them, so they can't enforce those restricted covenants, but they're still in the deeds. And in the Millwood area, we have lots of, and I don't have the data here with me, I wish I did, where we have restricted covenants in the deeds. Richland area, the only place that I'm aware of in Kalamazoo area that didn't have restricted covenants in the deed was on the north side, the immediate north side of Kalamazoo, and the north immediate northeast side of Kalamazoo.
You're listening to West Southwest on WMUK. Our guest is Pat May, a former longtime administrator of the Fair Housing Center of Southwest Michigan. She reflects on the 50-year anniversary of the Fair Housing Act, which prohibits housing discrimination. In what ways do you feel that the Fair Housing Act has been effective at the national level and effective at the local level? And in what ways does it come up short?
At the national level, I think the Fair Housing Act has been effective, particularly in the larger metro areas, metropolitan areas, because there's enforcement activities going on. So because we have enforcement, people are changing their policy. And the same at the local level. Because of the enforcement part and the punitive damage for violating the Fair Housing Act, people have decided to change their policy. And once they learned it was the wrong thing to do and we had the act in place, people started voluntarily changing their policy without the enforcement mechanism. And that's why we do so much education.
The Fair Housing Act has provisions for enforcement. And one of those ways that you can compel compliance is fines. What is the governing body that would issue those fines at the federal level?
It could come from the Department of Justice, depending on who's complaining. If we have an actual complainant, the state or the federal, depending on where you file it at, if it's race, it's almost always filed through the federal government, and they would be the one that enacting the fine.
Who oversees the Fair Housing Act? Is it HUD?
HUD.
Okay, so the Housing and Urban Development Department. What ways does the Fair Housing Act fall short in your estimation?
I think it falls short in that there's so many exceptions in the law that allows for housing denial with families with children in particular, and then lack of oversight. We have the private fair housing organizations or centers, but that's not nearly enough. There's only five in Michigan. I think there's four or five in Michigan fair housing centers that actually does the investigation of housing discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Michigan Department of Civil Rights. But I think because we have so few fair housing centers, and the fair housing centers is predominantly funded by HUD, we don't have enough enforcement activities going on, enough education going on. So therefore, people either don't know the law or they choose to ignore the law.
Essentially, what I'm hearing is you speak about some loopholes, like, So there's something that says that you can deny housing to families with children?
Yes.
In certain instances?
In certain instances.
Such as?
Such as if you're the owner of the house, if you own it occupied and it's four or fewer units, you can deny families with children. It's not protected under the Fair Housing Act.
Okay. So any apartment that is four units or fewer, you do not have to rent
right.
to families with children.
Right.
One of the things also that I hear in terms of the criticism of the Fair Housing Act, while it might have addressed and helped reduce racial discrimination in housing, at the end of the day, there's still a lot of segregation in America. And then the end result is that that'll lead to sometimes poorer schools. Some people might argue an uneven distribution of resources to schools in those areas. There's also been studies that have shown that it could affect health outcomes, mm-hmm. that if you live in communities that tend to be more impoverished than others, that could affect health outcomes and any number of things. You can go on and on and on that could be detrimental to people, adults and children living in those areas. What's the answer?
I personally think the answer is mixed income housing. And the reason being is because in the distressed neighborhoods, we don't have facilities to help them out. Let's look at the north side of Kalamazoo. We do have a healthcare facilities there. But look at the schools. The schools are basically segregated.
So they have magnet programs for the schools in those areas, hoping to draw other races, other people from other sections of the city.
But they're not, I'm sorry to say. And I'm not saying they're totally segregated, but I know for a fact that Woodward School of Technology?
Yes.
When we first had magnet school, the purpose was I thought was pretty good. Now you have just the neighborhood kids going to those schools. You don't have kids from other areas attending those schools.
Are you optimistic that communities might become more integrated in the future? And are you optimistic about improved compliance of the Fair Housing Act? I'm trying to think more generally what I'm trying to get at. Are you optimistic about the future? And I'll just let you interpret it however way you wish to interpret that.
Somewhat. I see that people of color have, you know, life have improved significantly, even in the housing. But what I still see is white flight. And when people of color move into a neighborhood, white people move out, and therefore, for whatever reason, the value of the neighborhood goes down based on studies. So I don't necessarily see that we're going to be totally integrated or integrated much more than we already are.
You think that people will just keep resorting themselves?
Right.
As people of color try to move into different areas, then people just move out?
Exactly.
It'll just be a shell game?
Yes, that's a shell game. I move in, my neighbor put the house up for sale, and they move, so then another black family, another person of color move in. So I actually watched white flight from the north side of Kalamazoo when it was predominantly owned by the Dutch community people, and they would leave their house, either rent them or sell them to the black community. When black people started migrating to Michigan, black people had the jobs at Precast and the Kalamazoo Foundry and places like that, so they could afford to buy a house. White people moved to the immediate south side. When black people started, you know, getting a better education now, and they started moving to the south side, white people started moving farther south, and they moved into Portage. When black people started moving into Portage, white people started moving into Texas Corner. When black people, one or two black families moved to Texas Corner, white people started moving to Matawan and farther southwest. A lot of white people still live there because there's not a lot of black people living in those communities, but as we move into them, they move out. So I don't see that we'll have, and I've been watching this for the last 50 years, since 65.
Is there any element of optimism that you have on any aspect of housing as it relates to the Fair Housing Act or any other related topic regarding housing? Let me rephrase that. Is there any points that you're optimistic about regarding housing in the future?
I am optimistic that we'll be able to live in, that people of color will be able to purchase and sell their houses at a fair price and get better loans, because there's a lot of education about loans out there. One of the big problems have been in the loan department. People of color couldn't get a loan program that would allow them to purchase some of the houses that they would qualify for. I'm not thinking that banks should just give every person of color a loan, but if they meet the criteria. But there were loan programs out there. My understanding is from the study that was done by the National Fair Housing Alliance that people of color were not getting in the program that they qualified for. They would get into a program that made them pay, that would be a higher loan payment or higher interest rate.
Thank you so much for joining us, Pat May, on West Southwest.
Thank you.
Pat May was Director of Education and Outreach at the Fair Housing Center of Southwest Michigan for 13 years and now is a board member there. She was on West Southwest today to discuss the recent 50-year anniversary of the Fair Housing Act. For more information about the act, visit WMUK.org. For West Southwest on WMUK, I'm Earlene McMichael.